You let it sound in right faith, higyonly be lafanechado night, sorry, vegoali. May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, O God, my rock and redeemer. Shalom and welcome all to our koshertorah.com open forum. I'm, of course, your host, Ariel Bart Sadok. And needless to say, you find me online at koshertorah.com. We are in a series from our 15th century book of mystical teachings, the Ohel Moed. And tonight, the topic in the text is reincarnation, a most controversial topic in Judaism. Now, for those of you who are listening to this and recording, those of you here live know that prior to our beginning our class, I always play some music to entertain our live audience. And tonight, my choice of music was the Western theme songs from the movies of Clint Eastwood. Things like The Good, The Bad, The Ugly, and the like. It creates, if you're familiar with the Western genre, the very emotional expression of conflict. And one of the best songs of this genre is from the movie The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. It's the scene right towards the end when all three of them are about to have the showdown, the shootout in the triangle there. And the song's called The Trio. And for those of you who've never seen the movie, this is done in it's called the Italian Spaghetti Westerns. It's certainly not like your John Wayne American Westerns. It's very emotional, very intense to try to create the crescendo of the conflict of everything. Well, I wanted to get you into that feeling, and why? Because this topic of reincarnation is very controversial today. Right before I got on the class, I post, as you know, on Facebook, announcements for our classes. We invite the public to come and join us, as you know. And apparently there is a very vocal voice out there. I don't know if these people are Orthodox Jewish or not. Judging from all of the dialogue and context I've been having with them, they don't seem to be expressing actual Orthodox language, experience, or certainly not respect. So I question where they're coming from, and their vehemence against reincarnation in Judaism is most outspoken and unfortunately very insulting and offensive manner. And I am, you know, always have to fall back to play rabbi here to remind people that's not the way that we dialogue. If and when an individual wishes to express themselves in an appropriate manner, that's their right. But to express ourselves in an inappropriate manner, that's not right. Actually, somebody here is commenting on the individual who was starting to send me some comments here, that maybe the individual's persona on the Facebook might even be a pseudonym. And that very well might be. I mean, I certainly don't know. And frankly, I don't care. People do all kinds of weird and strange things. But let me just say this for the record. Judaism as a faith does not seek a monolithic black and white understanding on pretty much anything. Judaism is very expansive in our understanding of things. And when it comes to issues of thought, you know, what we believe, well, we go by what's called the majority of opinions. So therefore, you can ask, well, do Jews believe in Yeshua being the Messiah? And we can say, well, obviously, according to the vast majority of absolutely everybody in the Orthodox community, no. Of course, you'll have the so-called messianics who will say yes, but we don't include that opinion within what we call the accepted majority. But now, to juxtapose this, let's talk about reincarnation. And this is a very difficult issue. I've already written on reincarnation for many years. You can go on koshertorah.com. You can read my essays in defense of reincarnation. The audio classes I've given on it, they're all up there. And tonight, before we go into the teachings of the Ohel Moed, I wanted to put Ohel Moed's our book, if you don't remember. I want to put him in a context, which I think is very important. Because I entitled this class, as you, for those of you who got the invitation, Reincarnation in Kabbalah, yes, but what about Judaism? Because this is the issue. Since about the 1200s or so, after the time of Maimonides, from the times of Rabbi Moshe ben Nachmanides, Ramban, the days of the Zohar, reincarnation has become a foundational belief in Judaism. You will find all the great Rishonim and Aharonim, which are the later and earlier generations of rabbis, all embrace it, period. Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Code of Jewish Law, the famous Gaon of Vilna, all of Hasidism, all the great sages throughout the generations all say, this is it, this is what we believe, etc., period. Are there people who disagree? Well, again, one of the comments that somebody sent me on Facebook lists me here some, you know, the famous statement by Rabbi Saadia Gaon, I think it was in like in the 9th century, who did not believe in it. Okay, fine. And they give me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 other quotes here from sources, which, being that I've not really looked up each one to see exactly what they say and why, I can't comment on them, so I won't. But let's just say that these individuals, who, mind you, are minor authorities. I mean, who knows? Avraham ben Rambam, in the world of De'ot and Jewish opinions, he's not one of the top minds. He doesn't compare to the Aharonim, those who we hold with today, like the Zohar, the Kabbalah, the Ari, Hasidism, Ramchal, the Gaon of Vilna, and modern rabbis like Rabbi Avadia Yosef, and even some of the great Ashkenazi Rabbeim. Okay? They quote this list that I have here. Avraham ibn Daoud, all right, the Sefer Rav Pa'alim, the Ur Hashem, the Sefer Ikarim. I know all these books. They're lovely, great philosophical texts. But they're not what anyone's really learning in the yeshivot today. So, while these opinions are there, we are dealing here with the vast majority of people who do hold this view. And I might add that the vast majority who holds the view that reincarnation is an authentic and authoritative teaching in Judaism, well, what is the source for that? Now, here's where we run into a historical problem. Because where do we find the historical source of reincarnation? Well, as we're going to see from our book, Ohel Moed, he's going to quote all these verses of Scripture and say that they interpret, and he interprets them referring to reincarnation. Okay? I'm curious why this author in the 15th century is kind of like one of the first ones to do that. How come we don't find any author doing that in the 5th century, 3rd century, or anything earlier? I have a book, an entire book here, which is called Bi'ur Ma'asiyot HaShas Al-Pi Torat HaGilgulim, which is an explanation of the stories in the Gemara, the Talmud, according to the secrets of the reincarnation. It's called Gilgul Galgal HaChaim. It's got all the approbations from many rabbis. And he goes and explains things from the Talmud. Okay. However, historically accurate, all of these things are after the fact, if you will, reinterpretations of things that were never interpreted like that before. To which everyone will say, oh, because these things were secret. Well, maybe they were. All I can say for you historically, that pretty much before the 12th century, there does not seem to be a record of reincarnation anywhere in Jewish literature. I find this very, very significant because we have a long history of the esoteric, what we call Kabbalah, the original esoteric teachings of the Torah. We've learned in many other places, this is called the Ma'aseh Merkavah and the Ma'aseh Bereshit. We have the writings of the Dead Sea Scrolls available to us today. I have heard That reincarnation is written there. I've said so myself. Well, I went to research it and I can't find it. So maybe it's there, but I still can't find it. Another issue. You don't find it written in any of the Hechalot literature. You don't find it written in any of the Merkava literature. You don't find it written in any of the apocalyptic literature, which is, again, the, in quote, mysticism of the Second Temple period. You don't find it written verbatim in Talmudic literature. You don't find it in the literature of, like, Rashi, the Tosfot. You don't even find it in the later literature up to the time of the Hasidei Ashkenaz, whose material I cover a lot of on KosherTorah.com. Now, somebody here in text has actually written correctly that the early Christians knew of reincarnation, and indeed, yes, they did. Because Justin Martyr, one of the original church fathers, did hold by what's called the transmigration of souls. And of course, later Christianity disavowed from that real quick. But it was there. And if it was there, then I must understand, if you will, by a Kal Vachomer argument, that the original Nazareans, who were the original followers of Yeshu, must have also had similar ideas. And I think, in my opinion at least, when I read the Christian Bible, I see echoes of what appears to me to be references to reincarnation. But that's me, and of course every Christian authority will tell me I am wrong, but I read with a Jewish eye. What can I say? Now, for the record, I do believe in reincarnation. I believe it is right. I believe it is real. I believe it is true. However, from a scholarly point of view, I must acknowledge that prior to the revelation of the Zohar in Judaic tradition, we do not have a literary record for it, period. And that's just really the truth of it. I mean, people say, well, look, it was because these things were concealed and hidden for 1,000 years. I know the story. I've written the story. However, the story is what the story is. However, that does not give credence to these people who call themselves Rambanists, or they're almost like an extremist sect of who follow Maimonides. But unfortunately, I think they're only reading Maimonides in English. I don't think they've ever opened up his real code in Hebrew, read all of the numerous commentaries on the codes to recognize exactly what Rambam wrote, to study his Mara Nebuchim with the commentaries, and recognize Maimonides within the greater context of Judaism. We don't take any one source and say, this is it, and wipe out everything else. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a Lubavitcher. You don't say Lubavitch is the only true Torah in Judaism and throw away everything else. No, you don't. I don't care if you're a Breslover. You don't do that either. You don't do that if you're a Haredi, Ashkenazi, Sephardi, whatever group. We, as Torah-faithful human beings, now I don't care if you're Ben Noach or Ben Torah, Ben Yisrael, it doesn't matter. We must understand the nature of varying opinions. And therefore, when we come to discuss things, we must discuss them in a spirit of respect and understanding. So therefore, even though some people can show me, well, this one says this and this one says that, there is always arguments that can be made that are, as always, unprovable. So for those people who want to be the extreme Rambanists, if you will, they'll say, well, Maimonides never said reincarnation. I'll say, well, show me where Maimonides wrote that he did not believe in reincarnation. Show it to me. And if you can't, that means that he did. Well, Rambam did not write really about reincarnation. So therefore, to look for him to say this or that. I mean, show me where the Maimonides said he didn't believe in the Zohar. Show me. That's really a trick question, being that the revelation of the Zohar came out after Maimonides had already passed away. But there are those who claim that he knew it in secret before it was revealed. There's actually some significant evidence to suggest that that's true. I wrote about that in my essay online about Maimonides, in which we asked whether he was or was not a Kabbalist. And I quoted all the sources that said that indeed he was, according to those who believe that. But with all of this being said, yes, I personally do believe in reincarnation. One of the comments here in text is speaking about a modern-day story of a little boy who had very, very full-blown recollection of a previous life as being a World War II fighter pilot who shot down in the Pacific. I've seen his story. And aside from that story, in many others, I'm a believer. But I emphasize the word believer. Somebody says here, I know reincarnation is true for a fact. Well, in your opinion, I'm sure that it is. I believe it, but that's me. And if others don't believe it, I do not ascribe to the opinion that I have heard from Rabbi Obadiah Yosef, who states that reincarnation is such a fundamental to Judaism that those who don't believe it shouldn't be considered Orthodox. Okay. The great rabbi is entitled to his opinion. The great rabbi will forgive me that I am still willing to consider those who don't accept it to be Orthodox, because I don't base orthodoxy on what your beliefs are. I base it upon what your actions are. And I might add that where would reincarnation come into Judaism from? I've heard people make accusations it's coming from Hinduism. Well, no, it's not. No, it's not. When you hear many people in the scholarly world talk about how certain elements of Zoharic Kabbalah are Neoplatonic, before you go jumping on the bandwagon and say, no, 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 all I can say to you is study Neoplatonic beliefs before you decide to agree or disagree. In other words, get to know what it is that you're saying. I've studied Pythagoras. I've studied Socrates. I've studied Plato. I've studied the Neoplatonics who came later. And you know something? I think the scholars might be onto something. Because even the Essenes that we see, whatever material of theirs that we have, there is clearly an influence, just like in everything else in Judaism, from Grecian sources. The Neoplatonics were very big, the ancient Greeks were very big on what was called transmigration assault. So if it got into Judaism, it might have come from there. I emphasize might have, because other people believe it came from Torah, from Sinai. Okay. All I can say is this. There are those, like we're about to learn, who are certain it comes from the Torah. This is their opinion. You wish to disagree, by all means. You wish to agree, by all means. People here in text are giving me all these messages, how they have their memories, and people in other countries have their memories, and other memories through hypnosis. I know all of that. And I will tell you that a lot of it is legitimate, and probably a lot of it is not. But that goes into psychology, and it's outside of what we deal with now. I only want to deal with the teachings of this material within the context that we have before us. Okay? You want to argue, you know something? You believe, the other guy doesn't believe. What are you going to do? Okay? That's just the way it is. You have memories of a past life, which a non-believer is going to say, you're crazy. But you're going to say, oh, no, I'm not. Okay? You know we're never going to convince other people. So that's the way it is. Now, for those of you who have detailed questions about reincarnation, well, I've answered many in materials that I have online. Rabbi Chaim Vital in the early 1600s, maybe it's late 1500s, I don't know exactly when he wrote the last of his eight gates called Sha'at HaGilgulim, the Gates of Reincarnation, that pretty much outlines the theoretical teachings or the understanding of reincarnation according to Rabbi Chaim, which has been pretty much accepted by the Orthodox world today. And for those who want to hold by it and learn it, I believe it is available today in English for those who have questions. So, you know, reincarnation makes sense to me, but I guess it just doesn't to others. Okay, what can I say? Our author here, remember, is writing in the 1550s. And this is times before Rabbi Isaac Luria, the famous Ari. It is before the famous revelations of Rabbi Moshe Cordovero. It is at a time when Rabbi Yosef Karo, who is the author of the Code of Jewish Law, is active in Svat. And remember, Rabbi Caro was a firm believer in reincarnation. We find it in all of his literature, like his book of the Magid Misharim. Rabbi Caro was a firm embracer of the Zohar, so much so that he accepted the authority of the Zohar in Jewish legal matters, even above and beyond the opinions of the other halachic authorities. And I will give you verbatim what he said. In his famous commentary to the Torah, the Beit Yosef, in a section in Or HaChaim, section 147, there is a legal question. When someone is called up to the Torah to read, and many people don't know how to read, or sometimes they do, we have a public reader, should you read along in silence along with the reader, or should you be silent? Well, that's the question. According to the law, you should read along, because if you say the blessing, then indeed you should read along with the reader in a hushed voice. But according to the Zohar, no, you shouldn't. There should only be one voice. So what Rabbi Caro says, Kol davar she'eino kotuv behedi beshas, b'gemara, afilum kol haposkim chulkim alav, ein shvakin an divrei Zohar b'pnei haposkim. Radical words, which mean anything, any law that is not written verbatim in the Talmud, even if all of the later commentators and authorities say one thing, we do not put aside the words of the Zohar in deference to them. In other words, the Zohar takes precedence. That is the opinion of Rabbi Caro, the author of the Code of Jewish Law, and that puts the Zohar within his context, you know, in his eyes. And Rabbi Moshe Isserles, the author of the Haga'ot, the Mappah, the Ashkenazi editions, needless to say, takes a very different point of view. And there you go. And that's why you have divergent opinions with regards to the authority of Kabbalah with relationship to Jewish law. You will find many a time in his Beit Yosef that Rabbi Caro digresses or differs with the traditional authorities, including Maimonides, specifically to ordain law in accordance to the Zohar, and that's what we find in the Code of Jewish Law. That's halakha. That is the history of Jewish law as it is, and if you don't like it, that's your right. And if you wish to go against it, well, I will suggest that you consult with your local Orthodox rabbi, who I pray will guide you in the right direction, because there are many different ways and understandings of things. But in this teaching about the reincarnation, our author opens up with these words, "Ata gale lecha sod gedol mesitrei haTorah umiral anaim," and now I will reveal to you a great secret of the secrets of the Torah and reveal it to your eyes. So, these ideas, as I said, were not to be found in records earlier than Zoharic literature. It's not to be found in, again, the prolific Kabbalistic writings of the Hasidei Ashkenaz, that's the Sefer Hasidim, Rabbi Eliezer Gemiza. You don't find it in the Raziel HaMalach. You don't find it in any of those books. You don't find it in the... Now, others will come back, like I said, and say, oh, well, it was there, but it was concealed. Okay, I hear you. And there are those who will embrace that in faith, and those who won't. But this is it. So, he now explains, well, why is there reincarnation? What's it all about? And he actually gives a very interesting insight based upon the teachings that we've learned in our previous lessons in this series. If you remember, according to the Kabbalistic way, we speak of there being the two parallel universes. Call them in the Bible the heavens and the earth, the spiritual and the physical, the visible and the invisible, the material and non-material, corporeal and non-corporeal, etc., and so on. Well, we also learned that these are the universes, what we call Yesod and Malchut. And he says, we know there's a big gap, a chasm that separates these two. And he writes, V'keshem she'hashefa yabo al yedei tiptuf lemidah esrit, kamo she'amarno, ken neshemot ha'chadashot yabo aleha me'at. Being that there is such a disconnection between the two universes, and the amount of flow and radiance of energy from our parent universe to this universe is very, very small, so the source of souls that come forth from that universe, what we call new souls, to here, are very, very small. So therefore, he says here, being that everything has been all messed up, the passageway between the worlds is narrowed down, you have a clot, and you don't have that many souls coming down anymore. Therefore, the old souls, if you will, keep recycling, and very, very few new souls come down. And he says, V'haremez b'zimina Torah sh'ne'emar. And he now quotes a very famous issue from the Torah. Genesis chapter 4, verse 25. Kishat le'elohim zera acher tachet hevel, ki harago kain. Famous verse that God has given her another seed in the place of Abel, Hevel, who was killed by Cain. The key, lo ha'enu yodim sh'harago kain, he asks the question, we don't know that he was killed by Cain? Rather, that Abel himself here was reincarnated a second time. Alright? And another place it says that the sons of Judah were Er and Onan. Right? And it even says this after they were dead. It mentions them, according to our author, as if they were alive. And he quotes the verse here from Genesis 46:12. And the sons of Judah are Er, Onan, Shelach, Perach, and Zerach. And Er and Onan died in the land of Canaan. Alright? It says after they already died, why did they have to mention them with those who were living? And he says, to prove to us that they reincarnated a second time. And also the sons of Aharon. It says, the sons of Aharon, the firstborn is Nadav, and then Avihu, Eliezer, Itamar. And then afterwards it says that Nadav and Avihu died. Right? And then after they died, they're still counted amongst the living for this reason. We have other examples now. He says, you have the daughter of a Kohen. All right, this is a verse from Vayikra, Leviticus chapter 22:12. Ubat Kohen ki tihiel ish zar, he betrumat hakodeshim lo tuchal. So if you have the daughter of a Kohen, and she becomes bonded to a strange man, she would be disqualified from partaking in the holy food, the truma. And our sage's quote here, he says, from the Zohar, what is the Bat Kohen? Who is this daughter of the Kohen? This is the soul of man. And when it is not complete in the observance of Torah and mitzvot, then it is called bonded to a strange man, because it is bound to all the unclean spirits called the unclean side. The secret is that you should not be connected to a strange side. Alright? Therefore, from the holy offerings, we call the Trumat HaKodeshim, you can't eat. Meaning that you will not have the pleasure and rest of the glory of the Shekhinah, but you are actually pushed forth from that place. He continues to give many, many different examples from different verses, but to try to speed things along. Let's move on. This all comes from God, reincarnation, that is why. So that the soul of the dead should not be lost from Israel. Somebody here in text has a curious question. And they're saying, new souls is in the souls that separated from Adam Kadmon before he fell. Okay, we have a little problem here. Adam Kadmon did not fall. Adam Kadmon is a different symbolic metaphor which has nothing to do with a fall. It's the highest of levels. I would encourage you to listen to my audio series from the writings of the RE from this book called Otsrot Chaim. I think it's very important, just as a side note here, that when we are discussing ideas, terminology, we have to be on the same page. There is so much misinformation in the world today. In that respect, the internet actually contributes to a lot of misinformation. People write whatever they want. People believe whatever they want. And everybody is so prolific And without a, no due respect, without a real solid background in education, I don't blame people for getting confused and not knowing one thing from the other. I have seen people taking my own ranks and twist and turn them in ways, and, you know, I've taken them to task for that. You want to create your own beliefs, you want to present your own ideas, that's fine. But say that, please. Be honest, don't say, well, the Torah says this and the Torah says that. I mean, our author here in the 1550s, as you know, is giving his understanding and insight into these biblical scriptures. And he's quoting from earlier sources, specifically the Zohar. But prior to the Zohar, you're not going to find anybody interpreting these scripture verses within this context. That's the history. And I know the apologists will say it's because it was hidden, and maybe it was. I mean, I don't know. I can't say. I know that's what people believe. I believe it. Fine. And if you don't want it, then I guess you don't. But you got to go back to basics. Somebody's asking a question here, the difference between what we understand reincarnation versus Gilgulim. The Hebrew word for Gilgul is actually means cycling. If you will, recycling souls. Yes, God is very green-oriented. He even recycles souls. That's good old God. Yay, God. Anyway, but on a serious note, I have an essay online. I don't even remember what it's called. Secrets of the Doctrine of Reincarnation or something. The Ari, and I even quote from Rabbi Menashe ben Israel in his book, Nishmat Chaim, writes specifically about what exactly it all means, and I'm only going to stick with our text here. If we have some time, maybe towards the end, I'll get into the other stuff. But this material I already have in print, all translated online. So I can't encourage you enough, do your studies. Okay? Learn the material. When people yell and scream, this is the right way, blah, 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 you know something, understand that that's their view, that's their opinion. And, okay, there's a great saying in Judaism. Learn this well, memorize it. Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim. These and these are the words of God. Or in other words, we have opinions. Opinions, unlike halakha, do not have to be definitive in deciding. When you have issues of law where in which people have to know what to do, rabbis make decision. But with regards to what to believe, well, as long as things are within what we can call hamizgeret, the general framework of things, then that's what we've got. And that's what we must understand. And I don't blame people for being confused today by all these people coming out and yelling and screaming, saying, this is Judaism and that's Judaism. You know something? Anytime that anybody is saying it is and this is what it is and this is what it's not, I'll give you a little word of advice. Always look for a second opinion. Judaism does not deal in extremes or absolutes. This is my critique against the Haredi community. When they start to embrace extremes and absolutes, they're following in a very significant psychological aberration, in my opinion, which is infected like a disease, other religions. Okay? When I learned in Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, my rabbi, Sephardi rabbi, made sure that we knew the differences of all the different practices in law between Sephardim, Ashkenazim, this community and that community, so that when we were asked questions of law, we would know the difference and how to speak to the people that are before us. Now that's a big task. So therefore, when you speak with a rabbi with regards to a law, you have to have your own rabbi, your own community. And what your rabbi of your community tells you to do, that's what you do. Why? Because you fit into your community. And he might say something to you that will be permitted or forbidden in another community. That's just the way it is. Okay? In my house, I observe laws in accordance to the Sephardic traditions. And therefore, there are things that I will do and how I will observe that Ashkenazim, for example, may not partake of. I'll give you an example. And the laws of Passover. We hold in the Sephardic tradition that once matzah has been made into matzah, it can never come back to be leavened. And therefore, we will take our matzah and we can dip it in water, dip it in soup, because we're not afraid that the liquid is going to make it or expose it to become leavened. The Ashkenazim are very strict with that, and many will not moisten their matzah on Passover. They have a Yiddish word for it called gebrachts. Those of you Ashkenazi know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, my family, we take our matzah, we dip it into the soup, we dip it into the wine, we'll dip it into the white lightning, we'll dip it into the moonshine, we'll dip it in whatever we want. If I have an Ashkenazi guest at my table, he can certainly eat at my table. He can certainly eat my food. But he cannot take that same matzah and dip it in that same soup as me and my family can or other Sephardic guests, because he has a tradition that he has to live by. That's one example. Another example. How about brushing teeth on the Sabbath? I can show you opinions that will tell you that the toothbrush shouldn't even be touched. And I'll show you the opposite extreme where people say you can brush your teeth, you can use toothpaste, even clean it off afterwards. Who's right? They're all right. Now, this is very confusing for people, because how can the opposites be correct? Well, with regards to beliefs and teachings and practices, that's just the way it is. This is the revelation of Judaism. This is our message. This is our light to the world. That things don't have to be black and white. They don't have to be absolutes. And you can have even diametrically opposed opinions, both, within the acceptable framework. Somebody is writing here, opinion. The word in Hebrew is de'ah, or de'ot. And we follow what is called rov ha-de'ot, majority of opinions. I can really get wild with you with regards to opinions, in regards to laws. We can talk about such issues which today is not controversial. But at one time, the controversy of using electricity on a Yom Tov, not a Sabbath, Yom Tov. We can talk about many, many other things. But again, somebody's mentioned here the difference between law and tradition. We have the laws of the Torah. We have the laws of the Mishnah. And we have those laws of the Talmud. Ever since then, the rabbis come together, make compilations of laws. The last one, which we consider to be, if you will, almost the final authority, is Rabbi Yosef Karo's Code of Law. Now, even though we're here to talk about reincarnation and transmigrations of souls, you have to understand that within a greater context, or otherwise everything is lost. Okay? Don't think that we're distracted, because in all due respect, no, we're not. If you can't understand the mentality and flow of how variant opinions go, then you're always going to be in a state of confusion. Why? Because if you're in the mentality of either or, black, white, this, that, then you're always going to be in conflict. I don't want you to the right. I don't want you to the left. I want you to be right in the middle. And you'll see all the voices yelling from the right, and all the voices yelling from the left. Your opinion, your response should be, uh-huh, okay. And I remember many, many years ago, when I was a young man, my early 20s, and I entered into traditional Talmudic debate with a fellow student. And I was proving my opinion, and proving my opinion, and proving my opinion, and he kept deflecting it, and almost like, what I, in my mind, what it reminds me of like a traditional Tai Chi reflection, you know, deflecting movement. I got very angry at him. And he turned to me and said, whoa. What are you getting angry about? We're learning. Learning is a dialogue of ideas. Dialogue. Discussion. Granted, our sages draw conclusions, and we follow the communal lead. It's not personal. It's not meant to be emotionally insulting or offensive. And I learned my lesson way back when, 30 plus years ago. Stay cool. Recognize and understand the proper way of doing things. It is clear and evident that reincarnation is a foundational belief in the Kabbalah. No ends, ifs, or buts. It is clear and evident that Kabbalah has in its integral place in traditional classical Orthodox Judaism for the last 800 years. No one can deny that. But again, historically, other than all the people who made all the claims from 1200s and on, looking back at things, the original sources just don't suggest it. Believe what you want. The facts are there. When it comes to a practice of law, do you really think it matters whether your prayer shawl, your talit, has black stripes or white stripes? Different opinions, different views. There are many differences like this. And just to digress, because I consider this very important, with regards to day, I am emphatic, and these are my opinions. You accept them or not, I don't care. The only definition of a rabbi is one of two things. There's only two kinds of rabbis today. A yorei yorei or a yadin yadin. A rabbi, in my opinion, by my rabbis and everyone in Jerusalem and all the Orthodox community, is one who has the specific credentials that he has been tested and has been verified by his own rabbi, not an institution, by his own rabbi, as an authority in Jewish law. If you are an authority in the first two sections of the code of law, you're a chayim and you're a de'ah, then you're called a yorei yorei. If you're also at the higher level of knowing the last two, the Eben HaEzer and Chosh Mishpat, then you are what we call a dayan, a judge, then you are called a yadin yadin. My opinion, those are the only two kinds of rabbis. I hear all these other people call themselves Rebbe. They say that this one gave them smicha, rabbinic ordination, or ordination. And I said, on what? What did you study? Oh, I read this commentary and I read this. I know people call themselves rabbi, they can't even speak Hebrew. They can't even read Hebrew. And you know, they write books, Torah commentaries, from everything in English. And you know, I sit there and I say, I wonder why people are so misguided. You know, it's very, very frustrating to help people recognize what is a true authority. It validates throughout history why there are always guilds, where in which, in order to have somebody who was qualified, he had to be, in quote, certified. Well, we don't have biblically certified rabbis today. We don't have a Sanhedrin, the rabbinic court, which officially certifies people. They tried to reconstitute it throughout history, even attempts within the last decade. Doesn't go anywhere. I guess it's just not meant to be. But we still have communal standards. And this is what is important. So, when you come to a qualified Orthodox rabbi who is verified within the laws, hopefully he is also educated outside of the limited context of law to know the greater scope of Jewish education, information, literature. So that when you come and ask a question like, well, what about reincarnation? Well, he will say to you, well, all the great sages of the last 800 years, you know, certainly accept it, so therefore we don't digress, we don't disagree, we don't defer. But I don't want to believe in it. Well, there are those, of course, those who don't. It's not that important. Why? Because it's not an essential ingredient of our faith. We have, as the essential beliefs in Judaism, the 13 principles outlined by our friend Maimonides. Never everybody says the Yagi Karim. We even sing a song about them on the Sabbath called Yigdal Elohim Hai, which I might add, the Arizal and the Kabbalah don't sing because they don't agree with the issues. Go read the commentaries on these 13 principles. You will find that all of the ideas expressed by Maimonides were not always accepted, and to this day still are not. To those people who want to hold Maimonides only, believe whatever you want. Who cares? But just recognize that what you're doing is separating you from the greater community. You are being a separatist. That's what you want to do. Go right ahead. I mean, that's your choice. But recognize that you are distancing yourselves from everyone. Now, as you all know, I live out here in the mountains of Tennessee. But that's a physical, geographical distance for good reason. But on the phone, on the internet, I am literally in touch with my rabbinic peers around the world every day. It's almost every day I talk to my rabbis in Jerusalem, rabbis in New York and Los Angeles, who either call me with questions or I discuss other things with them. And that's just the way it is. So in other words, it's not geographical distance that makes the difference. It's where's your head? Now, many of you know I am a very vocal critic of the hypocrisy in many of what I call the Haredi movement today. And I'm not alone. I certainly am not. You go out there, you'll find many of my peers, including my own Rob Parents, who will very much are outspoken in what needs to be addressed. Because ultimately we must remember, we stand together as a community. And this, I cannot emphasize how important it is. I wrote an essay on koshertorah.com, which is available now, on what the Torah teaches about idol worshippers. I encourage you to read it. Read what the commentators themselves say. Not my opinion, their opinion. That even someone of a different religion can be acceptable and blessed by God. Not based upon their beliefs, but based upon their actions and their behaviors. I had someone write me an email, "How dare I justify the blasphemers?" I said, "Well, I didn't. The commentators did." I said, "Please read what I write as opposed to commenting on what you think that I wrote." Education is the key. I cannot implore you, beg you enough. Do your job. Do your work. That's why I'm here. Okay? I'm not here to jump through hoops to entertain you. I don't want to tell you stories and pretty things to make you go, "Oh, how nice." No. I want you to work. I want you to have an education. I want you to be grounded. And it doesn't matter if you are Jewish or not Jewish. I don't care what your religion is. I don't care what your beliefs are. You are here with me, live or recording, because we share a common denominator of beliefs and morals and values. Whether or not you wish to accept beliefs in reincarnation, I don't care. There is always an interpretation and another interpretation. I'll give you an example. In the Christian tradition, the reason why they don't believe in reincarnation, they always quote a verse from their book of Hebrews, chapter 9, verse 27, which states, "For it is given to a man to die but once, and then there is judgment." Well, there you go. He died once, the judgment, that's it. No reincarnation. I've heard others respond, "Well, it says for the man to die once, but not his soul. His soul can therefore be reincarnated." Well, the man, which is the flesh, dies once. They say, no, the man is the soul. And they say, no, the man is the flesh. But it doesn't say either way now, does it? Good old rabbinic argument. But this we'll find everywhere. You will find vast majority, almost everybody over the last 800 years, reincarnation equals Judaism. Everyone else who doesn't want to accept it, fine. Rabbi Avadia Yosef disconnects from them, excommunicates them. I'm not so quick, but I do insist. Unlike on Facebook, when I was there just before this class, people calling me names, they're insulting me personally, you know, all this stuff. Oh, you're a fake. And some guy wrote me, you're a fake. And I said, a fake? What? I'm a writer. I write what's there. You can read it. You can either like it or you don't like it. What, I'm a fake writer? I'm not really writing? Fake what? A fake rabbi? My credentials are there. My education shows my credentials. I mean, but, you know, people go off with names and insults. This is not our way. And this, to me, is the most vital lesson about reincarnation. We say that we come back over and over again to get the job done right. I believe that. I really do. In spite of the fact that I find no record of it in the Hechala literature, the Merkava literature, the apocalyptic literature, Hasid Ashkenaz literature, Talmudic literature, Shur Kuma literature, none of it's there. But what can I say? It still makes sense to me. And I admit, Kabbalah, yes. Judaism, I still have to put a question mark. But a person is staying here, a comment in text, which is most appropriate. Believing in reincarnation or not, everything revolves around fixing one's character. That's what Judaism is all about. Okay? That's what it's all about. Someone else makes a comment. Many things would not make sense if there was not reincarnation. Let me comment on that. A lot of things don't make sense anyway. With reincarnation, not reincarnation, God's thoughts are higher than ours, God's ways are higher than ours, Isaiah 55, that's the reality of life. I've thrown down my hand, I've thrown down the, what do they say, throw in the towel, trying to understand God. I don't understand God. I don't understand what the heck he's doing. Okay? If I could speak from my human point of view, I would turn to God and say, are you crazy? What's going on up there? Look at all the horrors going on in this world. Why don't you do something? Yeah, I know the philosophical answer. Why don't you do something? Yeah, but you know, on and on and on. Book of Job. We've taught about that. All right? But what can I say? I don't understand. I confess it. Don't come to me looking for, why does God do this? I don't know. No one does. I can offer you all the ideas and beliefs and stories and parables that have been written for, you know, 2,000 years. That's my job for the last 30, 40 years. That's what I read and I study and I can tell you. But why and what God does? I don't know. Somebody's writing here in text that the migration of souls is a very complicated subject. And they say complex. Well, it all depends on whose system you believe. Our author here makes things a lot more simple than the likes of which you'll find written only 50 years after him by Rabbi Chaim Vital. If you've ever studied Rabbi Chaim Vital's Shah HaGilgulim, and I most certainly have, boy oh boy, he makes things a lot more difficult than the earlier writings have. Okay? The earlier writings pretty much say, you come back 3-4 times max, if you don't get it right, and that's it, like God kind of like uncreates you. But Rabbi Chaim Vital writes, oh no, if you don't get it right, the earliest sources don't really discuss this, but Rabbi Chaim does, you can come back as a dog, you can be reincarnated as a rock. That's what happens when you take drugs. You get stoned, oh, God puts you back into a stone. All right? You get all of this interesting stuff. Now, is any of it true, false? I don't know. I can only tell you what the literature says. And I'll teach it to you so you can accurately understand what it says. And that's that. In matter of fact, original translator and commentator to the English version of the Shah HaGilgulim was an old dear friend of mine, my original Chavruta, study partner, long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, Yeshivat Chaim V'Shalom, back in 1980. His name, may he rest in peace, was Shabtai Teicher. He was a good guy, good friend. Passed away far too young. He's the one who put out that material, and I endorse his work 100%. If you can pick it up out there, you go read it. You'll have a gazillion questions. Have your questions. My job is to just make sure you can understand the literature correctly. As to what you will do with that,
Okay. That's your choice.
So again, you will remember, right from the beginning, our rabbi opened up by saying he's revealing to us a deep and dark secret here. And now, he's got page after page after page of this material. But being that I've actually discussed so much of this in so many different places, I don't really feel it's so necessary to have to describe it now. His major insight is that due to the disconnection of the worlds in this state, which we call the exile, therefore, the souls, when they pass out of the body, can't reconnect. They kind of like bounce back down. We're almost like in a feed loop that goes back and forth and forth and back. And as such, this will continue until we've all learned our lessons. What is the emphasis on lessons? You'll find that in the most diverse Kabbalistic opinions, from Avraham Abulafia to the Shalom Shorabi, these are two different Kabbalistic schools, one as far as different from the other, they both agree that the purpose of mystical studies is the refinement of moral character. I can't say it any better than that. Alright? So, somebody's asking you a question here in text. If reincarnation is hidden inside the Torah, is it supposed that this is well part of the Masorah, the chain of links of the Torah? That's exactly what the people who believe in it say. Yes, they do. They say, yes, this is the Masorah. It came from Moses, from Sinai, and you have to believe it. There are others who say, well, no, we won't. What should I say? Okay? Somebody's asking, what can we do with this information? Well, you make a choice of what you wish to believe. Remember, the entire emphasis on the Torah is your practice, your behavior, your character. Rabbi Chaim Vital, the great Kabbalist, writes in the introduction to his Gates of Holiness, which is God's prophetic meditation. Character refinement, midot, comes before mitzvot. And that must always be that. So, we come back over and over again to get it right. When you read in the language of the Arizal, he says you have to come and fulfill all the commandments of the Torah. And only when you do that can you complete your soul. And it's very interesting. Oh, somebody asked a great question here. Do women have to reincarnate? Well, I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, how can anyone fulfill all 613 commandments? No one ever can and no one ever could. Why? Because there are certain commandments which are specific for women, certain commandments which are specific for a king, certain commandments which are specific for a high priest. And of all the hundreds and thousands and millions of us out here, I don't think everybody can be reincarnated as a king or a high priest, and therefore can never literally fulfill all the commandments. So it is understood metaphorically. How that is, go into the book. Go into the books. Now, I have two questions here in text. Do women reincarnate? Ho, ho, ho! What do you think? Most would say yes. Not according to the Kabbalah of the Arizal. He says women don't reincarnate. They will only come back for the sake of their husbands. Is that true? It is true that that is what the book says. I can show it to you in writing, black and white print. But is it true in reality? I don't know. There are a lot of people who have come back and said, I've been the reincarnation of so-and-so. There are a lot of people who believe that they have past life memories. I confess, I do too. Is it real? I don't know. All I could tell you is it's there. So, in that respect, I want you to understand, even though I really didn't cover everything written in the Ohel Moed, I covered the points that I consider to be important from his text. And I put it into the greater context, which I feel is far more important. That when you want to discuss controversial ideas, prove it. Right? Somebody will say, Maimonides was not a Kabbalist. Prove it. Prove to me he was. No, you proved to me he was. No, you proved to me he was. Prove to me he was. Blah, blah. Do you recognize the the lack of foundation, the illogical, right? No one can prove these types of things. There is beliefs. I have mine, you have yours. And I consider it an insult to you personally, those of you here live and those of you listening and recording. I'm not here to tell you, accept my opinion. Why should you? I encourage you, because that's my job as a rabbi, a teacher, to educate yourselves and to form your own opinion based upon the best preponderance of the education that you have. Don't sit back and allow people to feed you knowledge. Go out and get it yourself. Learn. Educate. You'll have questions. That's what life is all about. So, like I began this class with all kinds of song and music about the shootouts in the old Western movies, that's the way some people come to this type of discussion. Okay? Therefore, when you have a sincere inquiry and pursuit, call me up. Email me. Those of you who know me personally know, as long as I got the time, I'm always willing to chat, to talk, to dialogue. Personally, I don't always have time to answer long emails because that's just, you know, I can't type that fast. You know, people ask me to write a book, put in an email. And if people need to, I have office hours and we can make an appointment. We'll sit and we'll learn together privately or publicly or whatever. But again, put it in a context. If there is reincarnation, it's there for a purpose. And if it's not, whatever. The purpose is still here now. You go look through the Torah and the prophets and the writings. There is no great discussion of an afterlife. Because emphasis is on the here and now. Behavior. Refinement. Topics of reincarnation offer great and profound insight into the nature of reality. Sounds good to me. I guess it just doesn't sound good to others. Okay. That's fine. You want to know something? I like pizza. Others don't. I like barbecue sauce. Others like ketchup. What's that have to do with anything? Because you have different ways, different views. I'm not going to sit and argue with you about whether it is better to have barbecue sauce or pizza, or ketchup. Right? Can you imagine us having a bizarre conversation like that? If you want to say, well, reincarnation, I'll quote you dozens of rabbis who believe in it, and you can give me a list of all those that don't. And what conclusion do you draw? That these hold yes and these hold no. And that's it. And you'll find that the vast majority say yes, as opposed to those who say no. You say, well, I don't want to believe. Don't believe. There are those who will do many things. Understand, respect, tolerate, show proper character. Because if that's reincarnation, that's what it's all about. And I can't think of a better way to express this subject than in those words. So, that's it. That's our class. I want to thank you all for joining me. Again, if you're interested in material on soulmates and reincarnation from all the different ideas, you can go on to koshertorah.com. I already have many essays written. I believe I have audio teachings on the topic. It's all there already. And that's what it is. Thank you all for joining me. I'll see you online at koshertorah.com. God bless. Shalom.